I think the take-home message is that this upper limit of 3,500 international units was a good decision. I think now it will enable pork producers in Canada to more easily improve the status of their pigs, and so that is not a concern and may reduce the likelihood of having issues like metabolic bone disease or kyphosis. In order to get there, though, what we found is that adding 25-hydroxy-D3 on top of, at the 2,000 IU level per kilo of diet, on top of the old limit of 1,500 international units from D3, that seems to be a combination that really provides some good responses.
The Swinet Podcast Show Canada is only possible with the support and trust of innovative companies like
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Mycotoxins were found in over 90% of feed sampled in 2025. Don't let mycotoxins impact your pig's health and performance. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/mycofix. Swine Veterinary Partners is comprised of four clinics across Canada that specialize in swine health, management, research, and development. Top Pigs Norsvin, the world's most innovative swine genetics company.
Welcome, everybody, to the Swinet Canada podcast. I am Dan Columbus, and I'll be your host for today's episode. With me today, I have Dr. John Bergstrom, who is Senior Technical Expert in Swine and Animal Nutrition and Health at DSM Firmenich in North America. So welcome to the show, John.
Thank you, Dan. I'm glad to be here, and it's a privilege to be able to visit with folks here today.
Yeah. Before we get into our topic for today's episode, I'll just ask that for those of us who might not be familiar with you, to just kind of give us a little bit of information on your background and your journey so far.
Yeah, thank you. So, I've been with DSM, now DSM Firmenich, for the last 13 and a half years as a swine nutrition technical expert, particularly for nutrition being my focus. But before coming to DSM, I did my PhD at Kansas State University and studied things like litter size and birth weight, as well as some other topics, feeder design. And prior to that, I had worked in industry as a nutritionist for a regional feed company in North Central Iowa called Kerber Milling Company at that time. And they were a part of the Pipestone system. And so I was a nutritionist there for 9 years before going back to school to do a PhD. And prior to that, I had obtained a master's at K-State, and my undergraduate degree back in the early 90s was from Iowa State University in agricultural studies and farm management. And so I took, I've got a diverse background, having grown up around helping my grandfathers and uncles on the farm and working with pigs pretty much since I could walk, just about. So I've always had that interest in pigs, and that's what's gotten me to where I am today.
Pigs are constantly threatened by the exposure of mycotoxins in their feed. Fumonisins are a highly prevalent mycotoxin that can impact health and performance. DSM Firmenich offers a range of analytical services, sampling to assess mycotoxin contamination, and solutions to combat mycotoxins. One of those solutions is Fumezyme, the only FDA-approved enzyme to deactivate fumonisins. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/fumezyme to learn more.
Yeah, great. So I guess we can get right into the topic today, which is like everything you wanted to know about vitamin D, but we're afraid to ask. And we'll start, because you did mention in kind of like the summary, right, that there's new opportunities because updated maximum with the Canadian feed tables. So maybe let's just talk about that before we kind of get into the specifics of, you know, nutrition of vitamin D and what you're kind of aiming for.
That is a good place to start. You know, when I started with DSM and working with vitamins, you know, I learned that there was a maximum limit of 1,500 international units per kilo a diet for swine in Canada. And I thought that was that was odd for me being an American where we don't have haven't had that limitation. And actually, there were already, you know, nutritionists feeding levels higher than that in the U.S. Of course, they do have a limit in Europe of 2,000 international units per kilo of feed. But, you know, I was just, you know, not knowing the history of where that limitation came from. I was just curious, you know, and hopeful that the CFIA would reevaluate that, because as I got into learning more about vitamin D and studying it, it became evident that there's quite a few cases of lameness or metabolic bone disease or issues that aren't uncommon for producers where pigs are found to have low vitamin D status. And so started to become aware that you know, vitamin D is important, maybe more than I realized in the past. And even though we're feeding well above the NRC requirement estimates, we're still having pigs with a low status. And what I've learned over time is that we can improve the pig status, but 1,500 international units of feeding only vitamin D3, that's not enough to get us to where we'd like to be, to make sure we've got an optimal status for health, not only growth, but also the health and immunity and some other benefits that are continually being discovered. Where vitamin D plays an important role. And so that's kind of what's led me here today and to really study vitamin D and become more educated about it, while also continuing to do research with partners to improve our knowledge about vitamin D. But I think this increase in the limit for Canada is an important first step to allow producers to be able to benefit from being able to have their pigs have an improved or acceptable vitamin D status.
And I know it was a welcome change getting rid of that table 4, I think it was called before, right? And some of the limits it put, not just on vitamin D, but on other nutrients as well. So like you said, you know, vitamin D is a lot of the research coming up to show just how important it is, and that limit, you know, might have been preventing us from getting to optimal. I guess, what is it about vitamin D that makes it so important? Like, what is it involved with, and why should we be looking at vitamin D status in our pigs?
Yeah, so traditionally, you know, vitamin D was found, and the classical function is its importance for calcium and phosphorus utilization and for bone. But as research has developed in the last 20, 30 years, we're learning that vitamin D has some other important functions. Also, traditionally, there wasn't as much, I guess, attention given to vitamin D because our pigs were not indoors. And sunlight is known to be an important way of obtaining vitamin D for ourselves and pigs. And when we were raising pigs outside and they were perhaps fatter, not, you know, our genetics have changed as well. Our pigs have become leaner. Vitamin D is a fat soluble vitamin. And it's stored in fat. And so, you know, changing times has led us to recognize that, particularly with the genetics we have nowadays and their potential for, very impressive growth rates and lean accretion compared to 30, 40 years ago, their requirements may be different. And the fact that we're placing them indoors, and especially at northern latitudes like Canada or even the upper Midwest of the U.S., you know, there's a seasonal aspect too, even if your pigs are outdoors, where, you know, in the wintertime, the fat stores at these latitudes are important, you know, to sustain the vitamin D within your system, you know. And so now it's really important, and we're finding that it's, especially as we talk about reducing the use of antibiotics and things like that, you know, there's interest in amino acids and understanding how through nutrition we can improve not only health, but what are the requirements, you know, not only growth, but what are the requirements for resilient animals with robust immune systems so that we can minimize the need for feeding antimicrobials or therapeutics and help those animals become more profitable and have greater livability because we're able to provide them the nutrients that they need to be successful.
Yeah, I think anybody up in the north, up especially like Saskatchewan and that, are very well aware of the limited sunshine in the winter and how that might not be enough to keep it going. So I guess, you know, maybe along those lines, what are the primary sources of vitamin D in pigs?
Yeah, so historically, you know, we've been supplementing pig feeds with vitamin D3, just plain cholecalciferol. But we've not really, since we've brought pigs indoors, really evaluated if that requirement should be different. And the NRC requirement estimates have not been updated. Other than the last 2012, they did update or increase the requirement estimate for breeding animals, sows, from 220 IUs per kilo to 800. But for growing pigs, nursery pigs, those requirement estimates are still low. But they're from a time, again, when different genetics, pigs were outdoors. And so, and what we're learning though is that with pigs indoors, even feeding vitamin D3 at 4 to 8 times the NRC, we still have pigs, especially young animals, that are below what many would consider to be adequate in status. In the EU, 25-hydroxy D3 was approved to feed to pigs already 10 years ago or longer, perhaps. And now we have, in the last 6 years, the ability to feed 25-hydroxy D3 to pigs in Canada and the U.S. And with that particular form of vitamin D to put in the feed, we can get a much better status and outcome too associated with that improved status of vitamin D. So vitamin D3 supplementation in the feed because we don't have sunlight. And then also now 25-hydroxy D3, a pure form of it is important because we don't want products that may have some other maybe metabolites that aren't beneficial or could be potentially harmful. So the process of producing that for supplementation is extremely important as well. And so in the Canada, the US and in Europe, high D has been recognized to be a safe source of 25-hydroxy D3 in order to help improve the vitamin D status of our pigs.
Okay, great. You've mentioned status a couple of times with them. So I guess the question should be asked, you know, how do I know if my pigs are getting enough vitamin D and their status is okay?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And, you know, back when I was a nutritionist many years ago, we weren't checking pigs for their vitamin D status. It wasn't necessarily on their radar very often. But as there's been times when there's been increases in cases at some of the veterinary diagnostic labs in metabolic bone disease and things like that, they're looking at checking vitamin D status then, and they often find in those cases the pig status is low. So it's on people's radar now, and people are more aware. It's drawn some attention to the importance of vitamin D, and there's some debate as to whether or not status matters, because you can find pigs without any compromises in bone mineralization that have a low status. But I think what it's really about is risk. And when you have those cases of metabolic bone disease or lameness, or maybe even pigs that aren't healthy, that's been found too in recent research that sick pigs have a lower status. And so you rarely, or I've never seen a pig that had issues with bone mineralization that had a high vitamin D status. So it is a tool and more people are checking that. And we often find, because you know, physiologically the main source of vitamin D was sunlight, some survey of pigs outdoors, you can find really good status even in pigs at weaning if they've been raised outdoors. But vitamin D is not a nutrient that's transferred very well. It's, there's not a high concentration of it in milk. So the pig is not getting it through milk. And so oftentimes we find pigs at weaning have a very low status when they're raised indoors in our facilities. And it, so it's kind of related to, you could almost relate it to the situation with iron injections, where, you know, the sow does not provide enough iron. When pigs were outside, they got it from rooting in the dirt and other things in their environment. And so vitamin D is one of these nutrients we need to really think about its importance, and it may need to be supplemented differently in order to make sure that pigs have a good status and have enough of the nutrient to optimize their health and productivity.
Yeah. So speaking of supplementation, and now that you mentioned that they don't, you know, it's not transferred in the milk, maybe this will differ depending on the life stage that you're talking about, right? But how would we ensure then that the pigs are getting enough vitamin D to maintain that good status?
That's an excellent question. First of all, I think what we've learned too, through most of the research that has actually been done looking at the effects of feeding it to the sows and the benefits to the progeny. And Dr. Crenshaw in his lab 10, 15 years ago, you know, they found they were having cases of kyphosis, or humpyback pig, or humpback pig is what many producers would call it or recognize in terminology. And they, you know, they were checking for mycotoxins. They were checking this, that. Finally, they found vitamin D was absent in their premix. And it wasn't the sows being affected so much, but the pigs were being born. And then after weaning, they're developing kyphosis. They have compromised bone development and mineralization and slowed growth. And, you know, historically, kyphosis had been considered an idiopathic disease. You know, no one could really pin it on one thing. And there are multiple, you know, causes, supposedly. I've seen some research suggesting genetics can play a role. But what Dr. Crenshaw identified is that vitamin D is an important nutrient, and that how we feed the sow impacts the piglet. So the first place is make sure that we have a good status in our sows. And there's also been research with feeding 25-hydroxy-D3 to get an improved status, that if those sows have an improved status from feeding 25-hydroxy-D3, will have an influence on fetal muscle fiber development. And there's actually been some research now following some pigs all the way to slaughter, from sows fed D3 versus sows receiving 25-hydroxy-D3 to improve their status and showing an impact on the growth rates and of the progeny and feed efficiency. So that's a good place to start. And then in young pigs at weaning, we typically find, even if the sows are receiving, have a good status, the pigs at weaning will still have a low stat, what many would consider low status, of around 4 to 8 nanograms per mil of 25-hydroxy-D3 in their plasma or serum. And what we want to do then, since we can't necessarily influence that in how we feed the sow, is feed, make sure that our nursery diets have a good, safe and optimal level of vitamin D supplementation, so we can increase their status. And we can see that with 25-hydroxy-D3 in the first nursery diets, we can improve the status of those pigs very quickly. You know, within 2 weeks, we've got feeding 25-hydroxy-D3, not D3. We can improve their status from, say, around 7 to 15 to 30 within 2 weeks. Also, Dr. Jacques Matt, who retired in the recent years from Sherbrooke had done some research on vitamin D and looked at UVB rays or light in the farrowing pens, and then supplementing the pigs through injection while they're on the sow or oral supplementation. So we can, you know, with supplement pigs while they're suckling and improve their status as well. But as you know, probably it's the same in Canada. Labor is sometimes not easy. And so, you know, injecting pigs, individually dosing pigs with oral supplements, you know, those are not always ideal to do. And then also the UVB rate, you know, light thing isn't something that's necessarily practical yet today on our farms either. And so I think it's feeding the sows and making sure they have a good status, because that'll have an impact on the progeny. And then once those pigs are weaned, making sure that we have the diets formulated correctly, and that the vitamin D that we're providing in that diet is at a level and of a form that's going to improve that pig's status very quickly.
Yeah, great. So you mentioned at the beginning, you know, the original Table 4 had a maximum limit. You know, it begs the question, you know, should there be a maximum higher than what that one was, right? And what can it be toxic? Is there a limit that we should, or you know, an upper level that we should be avoiding?
That's an excellent question, because before 25-hydroxy-D3 was something we could feed to pigs in the U.S., there were a few producers under the advice of veterinarians, I will add, that were feeding very high levels of D3 to try to get the status of pigs at weaning to increase. And they were feeding, you know, levels as high as around 10,000 international units of D3 per kilogram of diet, without much research behind it. Now, they didn't report seeing any problems with that. And as you know, sows are limit fed in gestation. So that may have been limiting the potential for a toxicity issue. But one of the early studies we did to look at high D, 25-hydroxy-D3 at Kansas State University, we did a pilot study with the titration of D3 levels to see how much D3 we needed to feed in order to get a high status like you can easily get by feeding 25-hydroxy-D3. And in that study, they picked a 9,600 international units as well. That's the amount of D3 we need to feed to sows to get the same serum status of feeding 2,000 IU equivalent from 25-hydroxy-D3. And so we selected the NRC. We had 2,000 IU's D3 treatment, then a 2,000 IU only 25-hydroxy-D3 treatment. Then we had this fourth treatment with 9,600 international units of D3. And what was interesting is when we moved into lactation, we saw a quadratic effect on lactation feed intake and lactation sow body weight loss. And so there's some clues that by feeding too much D3, it may be detrimental to the sow's performance. And so we need to be careful about chasing a serum level for a weaned pig sometimes, you know, by trying to feed the sow more isn't always better. And I feel very good about the 3,500 international unit limit, that the CFIA has moved to, because in my estimate, that's a good, safe upper limit. Because we have studies looking at these various levels, and with 25-hydroxy-D3 and that upper limit, we can easily get a good status with for our pigs without risk of toxicity.
Yeah, no, that's great. So I guess getting close to the end of our time, I'll just ask for a take-home message for the listeners today.
Yeah, I think the take-home message is that this upper limit of 3,500 international units was a good decision. I think now it will enable pork producers in Canada to more easily improve the status of their pigs, and so that is not a concern. and may reduce the likelihood of having issues like metabolic bone disease or kyphosis. In order to get there, though, what we found is that adding 25-hydroxy-D3 on top of, at the 2,000 IU level per kilo of diet, on top of the old limit of 1,500 international units from D3, that seems to be a combination that really provides some good responses. And we've had a couple of nursery trials testing that combination where we've had improved performance in the first 2 weeks in the nursery. And there's actually a study from Canada in Alberta, I think 2013, where they looked at some immune parameters and saw that feeding 3,500 IUs from that combination of vitamin D sources gave you a better outcome in terms of immune responses than trying to do it with 3,500 international units of only D3. And so I guess the message is it's a good time now to evaluate your vitamin D supplementation programs. And if you don't know the status of the pigs in your system, work with your veterinarians to, because I think we're moving to, you know, with precision nutrition in the future, we're moving towards, and if we can do things like dried blood spot cards, which is a technology we're working on for testing vitamin D in pigs, maybe more prescribed where we check status and then we adjust supplementation based on status, which is how things are being done in human medicine. You know, I go and get checked out at the doctor and based on my age, my genetics, my health, I'll get it individualized, you know, well, you're deficient. You should be taking this much and improve your status. I think the future is we're going to be more precise and we need to consider vitamin D status when we're evaluating our nutrition programs and the health of our herds. And so that would be my take home messages.
It's time for our famous three.
John, before I let you go, we have our final three questions. The first question is, what is your favorite swine-related resource?
Yeah, I hate to be a copycat, but I listen to the podcast when I can, and I share the same sentiments as Dr. Zylstra. It's the people. Listening to people, you know, it's a small community, really, if you think about it, that we live in the swine industry, and people know each other, when I have a question or there's something I don't know, you know, I can usually find someone that's an expert in that area that can help me. And so it's really the people that we work with, I think, on a day-to-day basis or continue to get to, you know, there's new young people coming up in the industry too. And some of them are very bright and have done research in areas I have no experience in. And so it's really the people and continuing to engage new people and new knowledge and be open-minded. And so it's really the people, I think, are the best resource.
Yep, I would agree. Okay, the next question then is, what is a favorite book or resource outside of swine?
Well, I'm probably going to flunk this one too, because I have trouble picking a single book. I think it's unfair to other books that I like to pick a single one. So, I really love studying history. One thing I've discovered is I like studying the history of nutrition too. Is I've delved into some of these vitamin topics while working at DSM. I've found some really neat publications from the 30s and 40s and 50s when they're just discovering, you know, the importance of vitamins and how to supplement and things. And I think it's important to acknowledge and pay respect to our predecessors, you know, that made these discoveries. A lot of times the discovery of vitamins was associated with recognizing there's a deficiency because of a health condition, and that it's the absence of something that's causing this condition. And so I'm really like studying history and reading up on nutritional history as well, and how our field has grown and continues to improve to be more precise and expand beyond just feed them and weigh them trials, but try to optimize health so that we can help with the global challenges of sustainability, not overfeeding, but, you know, trying to feed the animals to have optimal performance and provide healthy quality protein to a growing you know, global population. So,
okay. And our last question is, when you look back at leaders, or I mean, even currently, leaders that you work with, what is a characteristic that you think that they share?
Yeah. So I've thought about this, and I've listened to previous podcasts too, but one thing that popped at top of mind here for me recently is leaders, good leaders are people that say, they do what they say they're going to do. They follow through, you know, but also to add to, you know, to strengthen perhaps the messages from some previous guests here, you know, people that are open-minded, willing to listen, and then also act, you know, but open to ideas. And so, and also acknowledge when they're wrong, to own, you know, own what they do, you know, and we're not always right. And sometimes to move forward and make progress, we have to recognize that and then make a change. And I think it's important, that a leader is seeking feedback on how they can improve. And then again, acting on that and always trying to improve. I think that's what makes successful leaders, is people that are always trying to improve, and they're taking in information to help them with that personal development.
Yeah, very good. Well, John, that brings us to the end. Thank you for coming on. Great information about vitamin D. It was a pleasure talking to you today. So thanks again.
Yep, thank you. Yep.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.